Good morning. We're going to call the meeting to order. Acknowledge that Vince Granato is sitting in for Curtis this morning. And I'll call for a motion and second to grant a leave of absence to Commissioners Chamberlain, who's out of town, and to Commissioner Pierce, who's ill.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. I'll now call for a motion and second for approval of the minutes of the regular commission meeting of July 11th, 2018. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Vince, if you could give us your executive director's report, please.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Welcome to our commission meeting. I am filling in for Curtis. He's enjoying a couple of weeks of vacation here this month, so good for him. We do have some safety champions that are up on the screen, and I'd like to call on Stan for his monthly safety message.
Thanks, Vince. My message today is on the Port of Portland safety achievement goals and continuous improvement efforts. I am pleased to report that the employees of the port completed the safest fiscal year in our history on June 30th. Our recordable incident rate was 2.52. The safety improvement is the result of many inputs, including management commitment, employee involvement, as well as hazard recognition and mitigations. Still, almost 20 of our employees were injured on the job under our supervision and required doctor's attention, which is too many. Nearly half of those injuries involved days away from work in addition to the day of injury or restricted time from work, far too many. Our goal is zero injuries, and there is still much work to be done on our continuous improvement to zero journey. We recognize the safety milestones and learn from our past as we accelerate improvements to foster a safer, healthier workplace, and we are transitioning to an organization that is in control of safety and manages it positively on a daily basis. So to that end, the port conducted a safety perception survey over the last few months to better understand our current state safety culture and our perceived strengths and opportunity areas. Employees of all levels took the safety perception survey that measures 21 statistically validated safety culture indicators against the port's performance regarding the 6 criteria for safety excellence, positive safety accountabilities, and safety systems that ensure control over safety. And here's the 21 survey indicators up on the board. The results are complete, and we want to thank the employees who actively participated by taking the survey and making themselves available for on-site cultural interview sessions. We are now actively engaging with work groups to communicate the results, disseminate the report data, and action plan improvements on the gaps that were revealed by the survey. Safety perception survey reports will assist in focusing resources to lever our strengths and pivot on our opportunity areas. Combined with ongoing safety and health efforts, the safety perception survey action plans will continue to foster safety cultural excellence in the organization. Vince, that's my safety message today.
Thank you, Stan.
Yep.
Business, a few updates on that. We had the MV Hoyinger arrived at Terminal 6. Last week, it discharged 437 53-foot containers. These were loaded for China, purchased by the UP in support of their U.S. intermodal operations. This is a little different kind of an operation for us, and we actually had to get some specialized equipment down from Seattle. As you know, normally containers are either 20s and 40s, but a 53-footer takes special equipment. So we got some special equipment down there. It took us a little bit longer to get the ship's containers discharged, but overall productivity was really pretty good. We appreciated the ILWU and the labor on this, but it did take a couple extra shifts just because it's a much more complicated operation. These are the nice kind of opportunities that we have created, obviously, with Terminal 6 being open now that had passed before. So we're exploring doing lessons learned here with our team to make sure that we're competitive to do these kinds of operations here in the future and create more revenue. Another picture here, although it was announced back in July, we did receive our Travel and Leisure Award, and we sent three folks back to New York City for a special party to receive the award there. So you've got Walt Frohman, Shannon MacArthur, and Richard Liu all went back. These folks have really had a lot to do with the customer service program here at PDX that helps us receive these awards. So we sent them back there to pick up the award. Obviously, as you know, six in a row, we're going to need a new trophy case here pretty soon. When you look at summer passenger volumes, they're just tremendous. Every month we continue to set new records. This month and in August as well, we've had days where there have been over 70,000 people going through the building. And just for comparison, last year during Thanksgiving, right, which was whenever the media comes out and thinks it's the busiest time, we did 62,000. That's kind of an average day in the summer. And the slowest day we get here is July 4th. But every day beyond that, after July 4th, there's over 62,000 people going through the building here every day. And it'll be that way all the way through August. And what we're finding is just the peaks are pushing further and further into the evening. If you come out here, maybe many of you have, at 10:30 at night, it's very, very busy. And there's a lot more departures and arrivals coming in. So we're just extending the hours of when the airport is operating and getting continually busy. On the construction side, Concourse E, as you see it, driving up Airport Way, is coming along really very well. We'll start to see steel coming out of the ground here in the next month or so. They've been working in ground with utilities. Best part of this, the project is on budget, on schedule. Certainly things that we love hearing about and our airline partners love hearing as well. We're starting some of the enabling work that really is going to get into the Packer project next. So on Monday night, we're doing a new return to airport U-turn, which is going to happen at 82nd. This is going to be for our new exit plaza future and for the future parking and rental car facility. Most of this work will happen late at night, but as you know, the return to terminal that you find closer into the building, that will eventually go away because that's the area that we're going to need for the exit plaza when it gets relocated. So returning to the terminal will be a U-turn up at 82nd. For the second year in a row, we're partnering with Feast, which is the annual food and beverage here in Portland that honors the best of the Pacific Northwest. Last Friday, we kicked off four events that we're doing here in the airport. We partnered with Country Cat. In the next 3 weeks, we'll work with Kenny and Zooks, Deschutes Brewery, who opened here recently in June, and then also Stumptown Coffee Roasters. And we're hosting a month-long Instagram contest with Feast. And some lucky person will win Feast for Life tickets. So that'll happen here in September. Another really good story is Bangkok Express is going to open later this month here in the PDX Clock Tower. And Bangkok started in one of our food trucks. The only other facility that they have outside of the airport is a food cart, and we brought them in. They operated a food truck. It was very successful. The employees loved them. And we had hoped this would be an incubator for people to be able to figure out what it really takes to work in the airport. And we went through a process, and they were have signed up to open a new store here, an inline store in the food court area in the Clock Tower Plaza. So they're a minority woman-owned business certified as an airport concession disadvantaged business enterprise. And so we're really excited to have them here. And I know the employees are excited for them to come back as well. We have a Port Youth Career Week next week. Some port staff across a number of the different fields are hosting high school students for a week of career-related information and experience. This is hosted by our Port Pop Culture team and focuses on equity and inclusion. Also, on August 15th, the port's joining Metro and TriMet at a Tequiza event in Cornelius, hosted by Centro Cultural, to discuss projects of interest in Spanish. For us, we'll be doing our Hillsborough Master Plan and sharing what's been going on with that project shortly. As you drove in today, I'm sure you saw the haze from all the wildfires, and with the fire on the mountain that's going here and also in California, we have four firefighters that are down helping in California. This is part of our mutual aid program that we have our officers and firefighters go out to various hot spots. They were up in the gorge last year, up in Mosier. They were down in California last year as well. So right now we have a group of four down there, and they take one truck. They'll be down there as long as they need to, and then they'll come back, and we'll rotate folks out if we end up having to do that as well. It's a volunteer basis, and we backfill typically through overtime to make that happen. But it's really a good program between the states to do that. And lastly, the photo on the wall here, I'd like to just acknowledge our own Donna Prigmore, who you will hear from a little bit later here as a formal agenda item, was promoted to Brigadier General. And so I would like to congratulate Donna on that. She's the first female in Oregon Air National Guard to be promoted to the rank of Brigadier General as a traditional part-time guardsman. And Donna's been with us for how many years total, Donna? 10 years. But Donna was assigned through her work with the Guard and to the air base across the field, and she was in Klamath Falls and also back at the Pentagon for a period of time, and really did a tremendous job there. She came back to us in about, what, February? So we're thrilled to get her back, but it really is a great honor for her, and just want to congratulate Donna as the newest Brigadier General. So congratulations, Donna. That's my report.
Thank you. Any questions? I'll call for a motion and second for approval of the executive director's report.
So
all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Do we have anyone signed up for public comment today? Okay. So Vince, if you could introduce the first general discussion item, please.
I will. So this morning we have our folks from our community advisory committee doing their annual report to PDX. Back in 2011, City of Portland and Vancouver created this committee. It's a diverse regional committee which came out of our Airport Futures Master Plan that was adopted in April. I've been on this committee since its inception in 2011, and I've really enjoyed the opportunity to get to work with this group. We've had a lot of opportunity to wade into some topics, certainly related to airport development, but we've done some other things in there too. We've talked about social equity. There was a subcommittee on that. We did wages at PDX. We talked about service animals. Basically, anything related to the airport, this group engages on. And we've also had some of the members of the what we call the CAC participate in some of our RFP processes. And Ron is here as well. And Ron Glanville has participated in some of our concession programs. And as we've done RFPs for that, it's really a good opportunity for us to join with the community on that. And so we have a couple people here who are going to talk. So in January, we had our 5-year anniversary. Hard for me to believe it's already been 5 years for that. We have Jeff Owen here from TriMet, and Ron Glanville, who is also here. I don't know if we have any of the other members in attendance, but thrilled to have them here. And so to do their annual report out on how things are going, what they see, and any feedback that you have for us on the program itself.
Great. Thank you very much. Am I on here?
You are.
My name is Jeff Owen. My day job is a strategic primer.
Hi, I'm Ron Glanville. I represent Outer East Portland on CAC. I'm a retired chef, traveler, and also an
Thank you for taking the time to have us on your agenda today. We just have a few slides and a few highlights to go through for you.
Does this work? It's really more of a mouse. Just keep
the
it
left
on.
One?
The top, maybe.
There.
There we go.
I guess. Is that the first one?
Yeah.
Do I read this or you?
Yeah, you got
it. Okay. Good morning. As a reminder, I want to give you some background on the PDX Committee, Community Advisory Committee. The PDX CAC was created as a result of the 2008-2011 PDX Airport Futures process. We have 20 voting members and 10 ex officio members representing diverse bi-state regional interests. The committee is a partnership with the cities of Vancouver, Portland, and our surrounding community. We meet quarterly. Each meeting has a special interest topic as its focus, and we are in the middle of our fourth year. You should have our annual report, which is this, in your packets, so you can look through some of what we have covered in our meetings. We particularly appreciate the transparency of the updates of Vince Granato at each meeting, telling us about the airport sustainability business, construction, and planning projects. We have some very active discussions about PDX projects.
One of the important things we do at the CAC is to give input on and discuss emerging issues at the airport and near the airport. We've discussed topics that include the port's small business program, social equity, the long-range forecast of PDX, and how the airport's tracking that forecast, the PDX customer service program, and plans for significant changes in the airport terminal as well, the terminal balancing project. The port is not only the only one giving updates. We also have a round table where all of the CAC members have the chance to share items that are of interest from their representative group or from their lens that affect the airport and they want other CAC members to know about. Under the plan district for PDX, instituted by Airport Futures, projects of a certain size and cost are required to be described to the public via broad public notice, and those projects are presented to the CAC to seek input from various communities represented. This year, we reviewed the publicly noticed terminal balancing project for the second time. Staff brings the projects to us a few times so that we can understand the many complexities. As you know, some of these projects are very large and complex, so that's really appreciated to help us understand the many different angles and complexities involved in those projects. And there's a lot of interest. This isn't a group that just sits around and nods. We ask a lot of questions of staff and get a lot of answers, so we create a lot of good discussion on those. The PDX CAC, with the recommendations from Natural Resources Ad Hoc Committee, also recommends how to direct funding for Columbia Slough Enhancement and Urban Tree Canopy projects each year. This year, we voted to fund four multi-year projects. The first is Verde's project for Coley Park, which is the North Slope Habitat Restoration Project. The second, Audubon's Backyard Habitat Certification Project. The third, Columbia Slough Watershed Council's Northeast 33rd Riparian Enhancement Project. And the fourth, the Multnomah County Drainage District's Columbia Slough Island Restoration. And as mentioned by Vince, Ron has participated on the panel to help select PDX concessions in the last concessions request for proposals.
You can see from the list that we have discussed a number of other topics. The port has been helpful in building capacity for the group to have background and knowledge on significant topics, which helps us to give a better input. The CAC is organized around the sustainability triple bottom line, and we welcome information that tells us more about the triple bottom line story of PDX projects. The committee has also appreciated hearing so much about the inner workings of the airport and about how finance works, the plans for construction, so members can give input and take back to their organizations. PDX CAC members were also invited to the port's 2017 annual business meeting, Gateway to the Globe, and the opening of Atlantic Aviation's facility and the Hillsborough Airport Air Show. The port provided a tour of many of the projects we have discussed in our final meetings last year. It was beneficial to get into the terminal to eight different areas, including behind the scenes in baggage, claim, to the airport operations in persons and hear more about the proposed future development. We hear more about the port's plans for social equity and continue to be interested in this topic. I personally participated as a guest in the internal equity workshop held by the concessions group this year.
So we typically have four meetings each year, quarterly meetings, and in front and after each of those meetings as a coordinating committee, we get together and have a chance to give input on the agenda for the CAC meetings and as well as review draft presentations so that we can try to make sure that the work that comes to the CAC as a whole is the best it can be. So in those coordinating committees, we have representatives from myself, the chair, Ron, the vice chair, our facilitator for the group, the cities of Portland and Vancouver, and many port staff, which are very helpful. This is, as I mentioned, to share agenda planning responsibilities with us, gives us the chance to be an active member and really help shape what comes to the CAC to get the best communication and effective participation from everyone. So as was mentioned, we're approaching the five-year mark for this committee, and as such, we're experiencing some member turnover, resulting in a number of new CAC members. So port staff orient each new member and help each member access information to function to the best that they can on the committee. For example, we lost a business member on the committee from the PBA, Portland Business Alliance, and replaced that member with a member of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. This helps us accomplish the work you see here. What all this process does show is that this is an honest, thorough public committee. The port puts a lot of resources into this group, and it is really valued by the members of the CAC. This structure that's put in place really helps build trust and shows transparency. On a final note, we continue to value the opportunity to help influence the port and the other sponsors, the cities of Portland and Vancouver, and we work together to plan for a sustainable future. We believe transparency and public access are important values in building trust, and we thank you for your continued support and support of the committee. And I think with that, we're happy to take any questions, but that that brings to a close our brief update.
Thank you. I want to thank you both for your service on the committee as well as other members of the committee. I know you spend a lot of your own personal time on behalf of the community. My question, and I look forward to looking at your report, I note there's a meeting evaluation section here. Mm-hmm. Want to make sure that to the extent you feel that there are improvements or changes we can make to the committee, its structure, or the way it manages its business so that you feel that the community is really providing input and insight that gets back to both the commission and staff and is acted on, we would, I think, be interested in getting that feedback from you.
Great. That's a wonderful point. Yes, each meeting does have that meeting summary, and they're collected anonymously. And as I mentioned, the coordinating committee is the smaller group. We come back together at the next meeting and go through those results, highlight anything that might need to be discussed further or follow up. And port staff leads that and is happy to help. We've reshaped the agenda slightly based on some of that feedback in the past. So that's a great point. We definitely will continue to do so.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the commission? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll call on Chris Sernecki to introduce the first agenda item, please.
Morning, commissioners. I'm here to in Vince's place to introduce a number of items today. The first of those has to do with our shuttle buses that serve Portland International Airport. So we provide shuttle services for airline passengers who park in the economy lots, as well as airline employees and staff. These buses run 24/7 on a regular frequency. There are 24 of these buses, and they've been procured in a number of different increments over time. And we have an asset management program that dictates when these buses are replaced. So the new buses will be procured using a cooperative purchasing program that is approved under port contracting rules. And Brian Francis, our mechanical project engineer, is going to walk you through it here this morning.
Good morning. We are presenting the procurement contract for 6 Eldorado compressed natural gas buses in the amount of approximately $2.8 million. These 6 buses will replace the 6 oldest in a fleet of 24 buses, and these 6 buses will be of similar design and amenities as the existing fleet, including the seating, luggage rack, and onboard Wi-Fi. With commission action today, the construction for the buses will take through approximately March of 2019, with delivery and training and buses entering the fleet service in April of 2019. The Eldorado National contract will be approximately $2.8 million, with an overall project budget of $3.5 million. This gives an approximate 6% contingency, which we feel is adequate given the risk profile of the project. The funding source for this procurement will be through the Port Cost Center. Eldorado does track its disadvantaged business enterprise with the Federal Transportation Administration, and their current goal is 3.43%. And we are requesting the executive director's recommendation.
Any questions?
One question. So we're replacing the buses one for one, same seating capacity, same number of buses. Is that correct?
That is correct. There will still be a fleet of 24 buses.
And have we had a growing need for more capacity?
I believe we've looked at that each time we purchase more buses, and they have continued to come back with purchasing 6 at a time.
So in answering the question, we don't need more capacity. We're just updating the fleet.
No, we do not need more capacity.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I did have a question about the small business participation, the target or the goal of 3.48, and I understand this is a vendor outside of our area, but do we have any sense comparatively of how the target for that region compares against what our own target might have been if we were contracting locally?
I do not for are locally. There are not many bus manufacturers around this area. I do know from looking at the small business participation, they have their percentages were at par or slightly higher than most of the numbers on the Federal Transportation Administration list.
Okay. And I'm guessing that the FTA is an overarching structure looking at this, regardless of where this would take place around the country. I mean, their guidelines would have to be adhered to.
Correct. It's nationwide.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, that quick question, please, just for me to better understand. The line 2, service and contracts, $200,000, almost like 8% of the total budget. What does that entail? Just a few examples.
That would be any of the port staff time or travel to the factory for final inspection of the buses before they are shipped here to the airport, or any other overhead items from the port.
Port staff already, I guess, employees of the port, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So this would represent the additional cost the existing payroll-related costs,
So typically people are paid out of an operating budget, but when folks spend their time working on a capital asset, we charge the time over to that. So we do things like there's additional work on these buses. They get stickers on them, right? I mean, there's other equipment that goes in it, all that kind of stuff that goes along with that. So it's more than just that they bring us just a straight bus. There's all the other port items that get put onto it. Our maintenance staff, our engineering staff who's helped do design work on this, they all charge to these projects. So it gets capitalized along with the asset. Yeah.
Commissioner Young.
Has there been any consideration to look at electric buses?
I believe there is. I know the next bus purchase for FIS International Arrivals is targeted to be electric buses. And in the future, I believe, but I can't really speak to it, but I believe there will be more electric buses coming to the fleet.
We think the buses that operate the international just between the end of Concourse D and the terminal, that those will likely be electric. It's hard. The ones that are on the running the shuttle out to the parking lots, the wear right now, the battery capacity just isn't quite enough. This is where we would need to probably add more buses to be able to get through those things are running almost 24 hours a day. So once the battery life gets a little bit longer, I think that'll likely happen. But in the short term, I think that we expect that the international buses will end up being electric.
Perfect. Thanks.
I have a question just about the procurement process, the purchasing program. And we've looked at other possibilities on purchasing. I think the last time we did buses, it was also through this purchasing program. Just want to make sure that we've considered all options for reducing the costs here.
Yes, I believe we have.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I'll call for a motion and second to approve the Executive Director's recommendation. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Chris, I think you have the next item as well.
So our second item here is in regard to the aircraft rescue and firefighting facilities. This building was built back in 1997. A little over 20 years old now, and is in need of a little bit of repair. This project would provide several routine asset renewal investments to ensure the facility can support the mission of our airport's fire department. And Alan Dekazian, Engineering Project Manager, is here to present the recommendation for award.
Thank you, Chris, and good morning, everybody. This project is in the amount of approximately $1.28 million. We intend to award a public improvement contract to J.R. Merritt to perform the work with your approval. The aircraft rescue and firefighting facility, basically the fire station for PDX, is located out on the northwest quadrant of the airfield. It's accessed primarily from Marine Drive. As Chris mentioned, the facility was completed in 1997, so 20 years of continuous 24/7 usage. The firefighters sleep there. It's basically their home when they're on shift. So there are quite a few deferred maintenance and asset renewal issues. I shouldn't say deferred maintenance, really asset renewal issues that have to do with the building envelope. You can see here we have some problems with roof leaks, especially around skylights. We have building exterior issues that require some maintenance and improvements, some ceiling and other factors that need to be addressed. We also have HVAC issues to address in the facility, the primary equipment being the boiler and the chiller. Also some air filtration system improvements to improve the capture of all the contaminants that come in off the airfield. With your approval today, we anticipate the construction schedule running through next summer. The intent is to work on the cooling system this winter when it isn't needed as much, to work on the building exterior and the heating system next summer when it isn't needed as much. Again, the construction contract amount is roughly $1.28 million. We have soft costs or staff costs as well, including design. We also have a contingency of approximately 15% of the estimated cost, which is appropriate for a project with a risk profile inherent. This project is a retrofit, so there are always unknowns, unforeseeable conditions that you run into. Total project budget comes in at $2.45 million. The project will be funded by a shared cost center, with about a 94% share being borne by the airlines and 6% being borne by the port. There was initially a 5% small business participation goal when we advertised the project. This was based on an analysis of the availability of subcontractors and suppliers. As it turns out, the low bidder submitted, I think, about 8% with their bid, but three of those subcontractors were not approved. Two of them aren't certified properly, and one of them was certified, but they weren't approved to bid the work. So Kimberly Mitchell Phillips in our small business program worked with the contractor, J.R. Merritt, to understand all the efforts they put into assembling a bid and trying to accomplish the goal, basically a good faith effort analysis. Her conclusion was that the contractor did perform in good faith to reach our goal. Because they couldn't meet the goal that was published, we have revised the goal to what they can meet, which is 2.65% of their contract. So in summary, staff requests your approval of the executive director's recommendation to award a contract to J.R. Merritt in the amount of roughly $1.28 million for the ARF facility renewal. Thank you.
With respect to the DBE participation, is there any work we can do or the port staff can do to assist in getting the subcontractors properly certified? Or
yes, I would expect that part of the conversation with those subs that didn't qualify would be to offer them our help. I also mentioned a third contractor that wasn't approved prior to the bid. We can work to help get them approved, and that will increase the participation percentage that you see. We just can't bank on it yet, but our intent is to do that.
Great. Thank you. Other questions?
Yeah, that's very helpful. There are two categories when we describe the program, certified small business enterprises and emerging businesses. What is the definition of an emerging business? I was trying to figure out if there was a way to – I'm very comfortable with the approach and quite frankly feel better about this than seeing a 2.3% target. I mean, I feel better that we're sort of moving people towards eligibility, but I'd like to understand what opportunity is created under the definition of emerging business. And are we using the terms interchangeably, or are they radically different characterizations?
Right. I'm not the expert in the program. I can give you a little bit of background, and we can certainly have Kimberly address that more fully for you. Our criteria for small business is really to comply with the Oregon, it's an MWESB program. So that's minority-owned, woman-owned, and the ESB is emerging small business. So full disclosure, I'm an emerging small business. I'm a one-man consultant in my spare time. So the intent there is small. The focus is obviously on small business, and the state has criteria for what that means. There's a limit on the number of employees. There's a limit on the annual revenues, and they go through an annual certification process to ensure that these are newer businesses that are in our community and growing. You know, a true small business program. It is an opportunity though for people who don't qualify under the either minority or woman-owned criteria to participate in our small business program.
Can I chime in?
Yeah.
So the term that the port uses, which is small business enterprise, SBE, covers all firms that are certified by the state of Oregon or the state of Washington. So we moved away from MWESB because we're dually state certified, and it limits the Washington certified small businesses. They weren't aware that we accepted their certification, so we came up with a neutral term. So that does include emerging small businesses, as well as disadvantaged minority and women and veteran. And to answer your question about the other two firms, they actually had already applied for certification. They weren't certified at the time of bid, so we technically couldn't count them, which forced us into a good faith evaluation. And a review of their efforts showed that they did everything correct to reach out to small businesses. And had those two firms been certified, they would have exceeded the small business goal. I actually anticipate they'll exceed the goal once the work starts, before those actual contracts are executed, because they should be certified by the end of the month.
Thank you.
I had a question on, as you look at what else is upcoming in terms of the required maintenance on our 20-year-old facility, what's next, and is that in our long-term budget plan?
Yes, the asset management group does have a next phase of work, more extensive renovations of the HVAC system, I know, is part of that. I can't give you a detailed list of what's in that, but they do keep a 5 and 10 and 20-year view of what needs to be done to all of our facilities.
I do know a few years ago an evaluation was done on the entire facility, a study of all of the major mechanical systems and structural elements and the roof, and they had a full report on the timing for replacement and repair. So there are a couple phases to this project. Mm-hmm. This is the first of a few, but those are all in the capital plan.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Hollering.
Is the port operating under a energy savings performance contract, or have we looked at them or considered them where we look at all our HVAC system, our lighting, our windows, our roofing, and there are companies that will capitalize the work, and we basically pay ourselves back out of the savings?
Yes, we did do a project as a pilot a couple of years ago. In fact, I was the project manager for that. It was with Johnson Controls, and it involved primarily roadway and exterior lighting. So all up and down Airport Way and in our economy parking lot and many other locations that were responsible for street lighting, we had them upgrade us to LED lighting. They did not provide the capital in that case. We funded that project and that capital. They did provide a performance guarantee, and we're going to run through the guarantee period, I think, next January or February. As a pilot project, our evaluation was it really didn't deliver us a whole lot of benefit. We have the capital in this case to perform these projects. We have the expertise to perform the project. We can identify and manage the performance risks associated with this work. So it really isn't a good application for the performance contracting model.
Good. Thank you. You
bet.
Any other questions? Okay, I'll call for a motion and second to accept the executive director's recommendation.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Thank you, Chris. Okay, so the next item requests approval to award construction contract for the PDX Next common use gate improvements at PDX. We have a common use system in place here. We've had it in place for about 10 years now. And as a customer or as you go through the airport, this works in a couple different ways. Either airlines have their own computers and systems that help process you. The airport also has a multi-user system that allows all airlines, I believe all airlines are on the system now, to use that common use equipment. So this project, this particular portion, would maintain and enhance some of the common use equipment at multiple locations in the terminal and improve some of the passenger flow at common use gates. Ken Wilhite, Senior Project Development Manager, is here to present the recommendation.
Thanks, Chris. Good morning. So I'm here to request approval to award a public improvement contract to Core Construction for the PDX Next Common Use Gate Improvements 2018 in the amount of approximately $610,000, $609,000. So the scope for this particular project includes four sets of millwork at Concourse D, at the end of Concourse D. I'll show you a sketch in just a second. Three FIS ticket counters and five baggage claim podiums, as well as some slight modifications to some gates, some doors at the end of Concourse D, and a short corridor. This is the location of the work at the end of Concourse D, gates D12 through D15. And on the deplaning level, we've got the work at the FIS here, as well as the baggage claim areas here. Here's the overall schedule. You might note that this was taken to AAAC in July of 2015. This has actually been a program. I think this is the third year of the program. Does that sound right? And with your approval today, construction would begin in Q4 and continue on through the next 6 to 9 months. Here's the overall project budget. This includes about $148,000 in contingency, which is approximately 9% of the project cost, which we consider adequate for the risks associated with the project. This work is being performed in an operating terminal, so there's a lot of coordination that needs to be done. The funding source is the Airline Cost Center. Small business enterprise goal for the solicitation was 9% based on the availability analysis. As you may have noted in the item, we had one bidder. They proposed an 11% participation, so that has become the goal for this project. With that, staff requests approval of the executive director's recommendation.
Thank you. Any questions on this item? Okay. If not, I'll call for a motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Chris, you have the final agenda item.
All right. I feel like I need to sit up straighter with Donna next to me here. It's an honor to introduce Donna. So this item requests approval to enter into a contract to provide customer service staffing in a variety of airport locations. With the continued growth in passenger levels, along with the new capital construction projects now through 2025, it's become necessary to prepare for these changes by supplementing existing resources and adding additional frontline customer service support. Donna Prigmore, our Passenger Terminal Experience Senior Manager, is here to present the recommendation.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So I'm here to request approval to enter into an agreement with ABM Aviation for the customer service management contract in the amount of $5.5 million over the next five-year period. The scope of this particular contract basically involves having frontline personnel in the airport to continue the level of passenger service experience that they are accustomed to, right? We already talked about the Travel and Leisure Award that we got again this year for the sixth year in a row. So there is an expectation that our folks have when they travel through PDX. And given the amount of construction that we will have over the next 5 to 7 years, this particular contract will enable us to maintain that same level. And we would use these folks in different areas of the terminal and different capacities. So you see up on the screen, the FIS, the Federal Inspection Station, is one area we would do so. They would greet people coming down off their flight. They would help with the automated passport control. They would help folks get onto the buses, those types of things, assist with wayfinding. We would also use them in the terminal to help support TSA. So right now we have GALT employees that provide bin running services. That allows TSA officers who are highly trained to perform their functions, and instead of, you know, running bins from one location to the next. So we can use folks to do that. It helps to free up the TSA resources that are critical. In other aspects of the terminal, these folks would be helping with, again, wayfinding. They would help with lost and found. They would help us to educate our passengers on the new animal policy rules. They would also help passengers use the common use kiosks, as well as anytime we need assistance in the terminal during irregular or emergency operations. Here you see the bid results. So this RFP was issued this spring, and there were four proposals that we received, as you see listed there. The criteria was as follows. 30% was based on qualifications. 30% was based on project approach and management plans. 25% was on cost and fees, and 15% on small business participation. So ABM Aviation, as you can see, was the highest ranking firm. They have been in the industry for about 50 years. They operate out of 100 different airports and have a lot of experience in the customer service realm. As well as in terms of their corporate culture, they are very customer service focused, as well as having a culture that is very much based on a value on diversity. So we liked that about them. They also operate out of London Heathrow, Atlanta, LAX as well, and also Phoenix. In terms of small business participation, so the RFP did not dictate that they had to have a certain level of SBE participation. However, in the RFP, we did identify that the port has a goal of 20% when it comes to these types of contracts. And so ABM did identify a 20% SBE participation level. They pointed out Rudmar as the company that they would seek out to enter into a subcontract with in order to provide four of the frontline employees that would be a part of this program. So they do have a strong commitment to diversity and mentorship programs. You can see there they've got programs for minorities, for women-based businesses. They have a membership in the National Minority Supplier Development Council. They're a member of the Governor's Mentor and Protégé Program in Atlanta, which is where their headquarters are. So we were very impressed with them. They also scored the highest, of course, in terms of points when we did the evaluation criteria sort of match against the others. In terms of wages and benefits, so ABM plans to pay their employees $13.46 an hour. They are proposing to have one manager on site. As we evaluated all of the proposals, we did notice that the other three proposers had a lot of money in their proposal for management, and we were looking more for frontline employees who can help our passengers with their experience. Their employees will be provided health care coverage, dental coverage, vision plan coverage as well after 90 days of being on the job. Vacation is offered to full-time and part-time employees after they reach 1,040 hours, which is basically 6 months. Their full-time employees are afforded an employee stock purchase plan, life insurance, health care, flex plans, and an EAP or employee assistance plan. And then they also, we really liked this part, they also offer a reduced tuition through the University of Southern New Hampshire, which is a fully accredited institution. It's an online type of program, and that is open to full-time and part-time employees. So this final slide just asks for your approval to enter into an agreement with ABM Aviation for the customer service management contract, again, for $5.5 million over a five-year term. You probably noticed that the actual contract proposal was for $965,000. So this amount is slightly over that. It's just taking into consideration cost escalation and perhaps, you know, a higher utility that we may have in the future as the construction in the terminal, you know, increases. And that's all I have right now.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You bet.
How many employees are this ABM that you anticipate being assigned to this project?
As far as the FTE count?
Right.
So 17.3. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And they're all employees of the ABM.
They will be.
Working on the premises of the airport here.
They will be, sir. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, my question to follow up on that one is, I realize we have a lot of construction, as you said, and so obviously the situation in the terminal will be more challenging for travelers. But a number of the items cited here are sort of ongoing issues that we'll have as passenger volumes hopefully remain high here as we serve the traveling public. And I wonder what consideration was given to having these folks be just port employees, given that it seems like we'll need people for more than 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we did talk about that. And one of the things that we were aiming for with this particular RFP was maximum flexibility and maximum versatility, again, over the next 5 to 7 years. So it's hard for us to predict, you know, exactly how much construction and how severe the impacts will be to the traveling public, right? So we wanted to frame this particular RFP so that companies could use full-time employees or part-time employees or a hybrid of the two. Because sometimes they'll have to work 4 hours, sometimes it'll be 8 hours, sometimes it'll be 10. So part of the challenge is we really don't know what that impact is going to be. So we wanted to, again, frame it up so that we could have max versatility as we moved forward.
Mm-hmm. Last question. I travel a lot, and I just like to picture where would I have, you know, in the past, I may have met these people on the airport. For example, you return on an international flight. You come, first thing you do is immigrations, then customs. Mm-hmm. then at this airport, you walk with the luggage all the way to be, I guess, put onto the bus. The bus would transport you back to the gate area. And at each of those spots, there are a couple of people greeting you, and sometimes they help you with the luggage. Do they, are those people part of this?
Yes, they would be, sir.
They're not volunteers. They're part of this.
So the challenge that we have, especially in the FIS right now, is that we have some people who are staffed down in that area as people come off the flight who are volunteers. And then other times they're HSS employees. And then other times they're airline staff. So we do not have a consistent model. And what's difficult, of course, with the volunteers is sometimes they're there and sometimes they're not. And so it becomes very challenging to create a consistent level of experience that we really are trying to achieve. So our plan would be to actually no longer have volunteers in that particular area so we could staff it and staff it with some stability.
I think I can say that here at the PDX, compared to like Newark, JFK, what have you, the best experience any passenger could have, that kind of a very, very, I guess, a courteous, friendly, and the people who sound and seem like truly interested in helping you. Mm-hmm. That's something that you don't have at many other airports. Mm-hmm. So I have been very, very positive about that,
yes,
personally.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. And first impressions matter.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
I appreciate the transparency around the comp and benefits and the structure in which they'll engage their employees. Have we factored in sort of the changes in wage requirements here in Oregon over the course of that contract? Are we at risk for that as we, you know, move up to $15 an hour, for example, by the end of that contract period? Is that built within the assumptions, or are they essentially assuming the risk for increased cost of salary and benefits?
Yeah, to my knowledge, that is not built into the assumptions.
I would just say there that my understanding of this is as wages adjusted throughout and the minimum wage went up and adjusted, if there were adjustments to the wages of these employees, that would be the port's cost. That's ours. We're not putting the contractor at risk to lose money if wages go up.
Yeah. So the port would pay that amount?
Correct. Yeah, the port would pay the actual cost of the labor and benefits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say I appreciate the thinking around the worker experience as we've had discussions in the community with folks about jobs at PDX. I think it's important that we keep top of mind having good jobs here for folks. So I appreciate the time and energy was taken into thinking about that particular issue here. Any other questions? Certainly.
May I?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
If you could please introduce yourself. And
my name is Frank Hildebrand. I'm a business representative with Teamsters Local 305. And in listening to your discussion today, I would simply like to say, with all due respect and the hard work that people have put into going through this process, I have to communicate on behalf of the people that I represent that $13 an hour is not an opportunity. It's not an opportunity for any, including minorities. So anyone who's had to rent property or purchase goods and services in this town is not doing a very good job of it at $13 an hour. I would just like to put that out there and ask that you consider it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead, please.
I think it's a valid point that, and you're saying that we accept the risk of wage escalation. You've built a buffer into the contract because the annualized cost is $900,000, but you've budgeted $1.1 million. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
On an annual basis.
Yeah.
So
a little less than that.
Mm-hmm. So would we accommodate wage escalation out of that buffer, or would it be outside the scope of this contract?
Want to answer that, Vince?
Yeah, that's going to be inside the scope of the contract. I mean, there is a schedule, I would assume, for how they're going to escalate wages over time as minimum wage goes up, certainly next year. So our costs will go up, but that's why we have that we are not just straight 950 or whatever that number is for five straight years. That's why there is escalation built into it.
That was my understanding. Just wanted clarity.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions on this item? Hearing none, I'll ask for motion and second on the executive. Do we have all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. I think we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.